Hi, I'm Bitch, pronouns he, they.
I'm Fifth, pronouns they, them.
And I'm Jim, pronouns he, him. Mitch, would you like to introduce yourself or do you have anything to plug?
I've been on this show more than a handful of times, I think. Possibly up to two handfuls of times, I think, at this point.
How much is a handful?
Yeah.
I mean, a podcast episode is a very intangible concept.
That's true.
I don't think you can fit any in your hand, really, but...
I would say like five would be a handful to me,
mm-hmm.
just because vibes.
There's something very fivey about hands.
That's true.
Oh yeah.
but yeah, I have a YouTube channel called Jan Measley, and I made this exact point last time. Statistically, you're probably here because of my channel.
Yeah.
Rather than the other way around.
Not yeah. Like by the numbers, it's like half and half. But that is remarkable. And Fifth, would you like to introduce yourself or do you have anything to plug?
Hi, I'm Fifth. I don't really do that much. I mean, I got an AO3 account. If somebody wants to email me, business, I need a job. Somebody hire me. There you go. I'm plugging myself.
And what would you say your primary skills are?
Dependability.
Oh, good.
And a detailed oriented nature.
You showed up early for this show.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's me.
All right. Are we ready for some topics?
I am ready.
Yeah.
Mitch, your topic is the Ace Attorney series, English localizations, naming conventions.
Man, so at the time of recording, the Apollo Justice trilogy remake like just came out. And I've been playing that. And I actually hadn't played any of those games originally. So these are all new games to me. And it's fun playing new Ace Attorney games because I did like the originals. One of the main things that I like about this series, which is the names that characters have, specifically the English localized names that these characters have. I am under the impression that in Japanese, their names are all like puns that are impossible to translate.
Mm.
I don't actually know that for sure. I'm just assuming that's the case because that's the only justification I can think of for why their names would be the way they are in the English version. The names are just wonderful. Like from what I've found, there's like two main categories of names outside of characters who have like relatively normal names. There's like two main types of names that characters are given. My favorite type is this thing that they keep doing where a character's name is just, they take a list of things and their name is just two things from that list. And it's a wonderful way to name a character. You get characters like April May, Penny Nichols, Red White, Dick Gumshoe is a like a main character who Horse follows that goat. Convention. Like,
does Dick Gumshoe count? Because Dick can be like a person's name.
No, Dick and Gumshoe are both words for detective. And his title is Detective Dick Gumshoe. So technically it's three things that are all from that list.
Huh.
But yeah, I love that type of name. We could just spend some time coming up with names that fit that format if we want. But there is a second type of name, which is where they just take a phrase and that's their name. It doesn't have to do with anything to do with their characters. Sometimes it does. But sometimes they just took a, like, forced it to sound kind of like a name. Like, another example is one of the characters you meet is a guy named Jack Hammer. What's his deal? He's an actor, of course. In the same episode where you meet Jack Hammer, there's a kid named Cody Hackins. Is he a hacker? No, he's just a child. Like, they're just a phrase. They forced it to sound like a name, and they commit to it. And every character is either a list of two things or just some random phrase. And it's wonderful. Reliably, every episode of the Ace Attorney series, you end up meeting at least two characters where you're like, come on, you can't name a character that.
But they did.
Notably, Phoenix Wright and Apollo Justice don't follow either of these formats.
Well, yeah, because they're the main characters.
They're the main characters. They had to put their names on the box, so they had to spend more time thinking about their names.
You can't put Jack Hammer on the box and make it be a game about court dramas.
About Jack Hammer?
Right.
No, I wish it
Jack
was.
Jack Hammer, the actor.
Right.
I mean, a whole Steel Samurai game starring Jack Hammer, I'd play that.
I feel like localization of names is kind of like, especially like nowadays in the time of like simulcast and stuff, like stuff doesn't get localized as all, like in like how with Pokemon it was like Satoshi or whatever became Gary or Ash or whatever, but like for the big flagship one nowadays, like with like My Hero Academia, they didn't do any of that. So it's like, I don't know, I kind of miss that.
Do they just use the Japanese names?
Yeah.
Okay.
English speakers are used to Japanese names in media now.
That's true.
Right?
A lot of this stuff, like in the 90s and early 2000s, like localization teams were running on the assumption that, oh, American kids are going to be playing this game / watching this cartoon, and they're not going to, they're going to be so confused if we have any references to Japanese culture ever. Which in Ace Attorney, their solution to that was the funniest thing.
The traditional American kotatsu.
I mean, the second funniest thing after the way they handled names, because what they did was the games take place in Japan, right? It's a, Like these are Japanese games. They're set in like a satirized near future Japan.
Mm-hmm. And they actually follow real court procedures in Japan.
The English localization has decided that we're going to say that it now takes place in the United States, but we're not changing anything about the culture. So it takes place in a version of Los Angeles that just is Japanese.
Okay.
It's Japanese culture. However, everyone has these names that are English puns instead of Japanese names. So, you know, you'll have your Maya Fey, who's a traditional spirit medium who goes to the temple and studies under her waterfall or whatever. But she's also, she really likes hamburgers is her thing. They change just a little bit. Just a little bit of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
But they keep the most obviously Japanese things because they didn't have a way of writing around those things.
Yeah, they like hamburgers and they wear a six gun.
Yeah. I feel like this is kind of like that 1-0, that one awkward zombie comic really sums it up well. It's like, let us come sit under the...
Eat your hamburgers, Apollo.
Yeah, under the traditional American kotatsu or whatever.
It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in Ace Attorney 5, which is the one I'm currently playing from the trilogy remake, there's a whole case all about yokai. And we're still in America, but this village here in Los Angeles, they're just really obsessed with yokai currently.
Maybe Yokai Watch got really big a couple years back. Who knows?
Maybe. I think it takes place in 2026?
It was the follow-up to Pokemon Go.
Obviously. Yeah. I like how the implication of, like, Pokemon Go versus Yokai Watch, where it's like Pokemon, you go and get them, but with the Yokai, you just sit there and watch them.
Yeah, it's much less violent.
They should name more games after verbs. Verbs are an underutilized part of speech in video game titles.
Bird fly. Yeah.
I mean, verbs are the main thing you do in games. I mean, technically everything you do is a verb, but like, you know, it's the thing that makes games like different from other forms of media, because in other media, you just have the one verb you do with it.
I suppose that's true.
Oh, and Yokai Watch is named after that.
Games should be named after the verbs that you do in them.
Mario push button.
Super Mario Run. That's a verb Mario game.
Yes.
Ooh, good. I think having four syllables kind of seems to be a point in its favor as well. Like Pokemon Go, Yokai Watch. Wait, no.
Yokai E Watch.
Proved myself wrong. Yeah, there you go. Perfect. It's perfectly true.
Pokemon select an attack from the menu.
Mario and Sonic at the 2014 Olympic Winter Games.
Yep. Four syllables.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure in a previous podcast episode, I talked of this very show, I talked about video game titles that are almost a haiku.
Uh-huh.
Super Smash Brothers for Nintendo 3DS is the first two lines of haiku. I recently also noticed that also happens to be true of the YouTube series Half-Life VR, but the AI is self-aware. The title is exactly the right length to be the first two lines of a haiku.
I mean, isn't there like a bot on Tumblr that detects haikus by accident?
Yeah, HaikuBot. It's a great bot account. It just...
Good bot.
Occasionally, when a popular Tumblr post has a haiku in it accidentally, it reblogs and formats it into a haiku.
Does Tumblr still have a, like, here's the feed of every post that's being made? Is that still a thing you can look at?
No. Bots need to, like, actually follow accounts to see posts that are made by people. Huh. Bots can't just access every single post.
What a world we live in now.
I mean, they can use Tumblr's search engine to find posts, but Tumblr's search engine is broken.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly broken on purpose. Like, it's broken in a way that, like, arguably is a good thing for the website, because it prevents the thing that Twitter has where you can search for, like, the thing on Twitter where you can, like, make
up
a guy.
For brands, yeah.
Where you can, like, make up a guy, like, you can imagine an opinion someone might hold, search for it, and then get angry at the person who holds that opinion. Having a really well-functioning search engine allows you to do that. So Tumblr doesn't allow you to do that because its search engine doesn't work.
Genius.
Yeah.
considering that it's Tumblr, it's actually not too bad a strategy.
This was something that came up probably like 50 episodes ago. Someone was talking about how the Neopets search, the auction search engine is bad. And my argument was that this is actually a good thing because it allows gifts to have real meaning because you actually went out and found this new thing that this person couldn't necessarily find on their own.
Mm-hmm.
There is something to say about things that are broken a little bit.
Yeah, especially search engines.
Yeah.
Search engines have gotten too good.
Yeah, threatening to put librarians out of work.
Now they're bad, but in like an annoying and boring way where they just keep giving you...
Just give you ads.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, you know, they just give you articles where they were written either by a bot or by someone who didn't give a shit. And it was just really low tier priority and not well written and just boring as shit. So you have to tack on Reddit just to find anything.
Yep. That's what we get.
What were we talking about again?
We were talking about Ace Attorney series, English localizations, naming conventions.
Oh, yeah. So we skipped right over this. Hey, so I think it's a fun game to play along at home. Try to name an Ace Attorney character following the rule of just pick any list and pick two things from that list. And that's an Ace Attorney character. And this is a game we can all play along at home. I've had a lot of fun trying to do this.
Dictionary, rhyming dictionary.
Perfect. Goes by Dick R. Dictionary for short. It's perfect.
Hat scarf?
Hat scarf is really good.
Thank you.
One of the best ones I've come up with was Chad Sudan.
Okay. That's actually awesome.
Is it kosher to actually have a name be part of it? Or is that...
It works really well. Like April May works really well because April is already a name.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Or Penny Nichols. Penny is already a name. But it doesn't have to be.
When people think about the guy from ReZero, like half of the people just picture a car in their head, Subaru.
John Water Closet.
That's really good.
No, that's a good one.
Graham Kelvin. Verb pronoun.
And that's all the time we have for Topic Lords. That's how I end the show. I always look for a good like moment to end the show on, and that would be perfect if we didn't have like six topics to go.
I know, right?
If this was Topic Singular Lords, then yes, that would be perfect. But it's actually Topics Lords.
Well, I mean, Topic Lord would just be one person talking. It wouldn't necessarily be one topic.
Well, Topics Lord would be one person talking about many topics.
Topics Lords?
Topics Lord, yeah.
Topics Lords.
Are we ready for another topic?
Topical Lords.
Please.
Fifth, your topic is the kissing mechanic in Bully represents both what is genius and terrible about the game.
I don't know how much either of you know about Bully 2016, the video game.
Wait, 2016?
Rockstar game?
I'm sorry, 2006. Yes.
Yeah, I played that. I finished that game on the PlayStation 2.
Yeah, it's fine. I've written over 10,000 words of fan fiction about it, unrelated to that. In the game, you play as a character who can get upgrades by passing classes, and by passing the art class, Jimmy, the main character, will gain the ability to get a health boost by kissing a person in the world. So,
any person? Or is it a specific person every time? Is it the same person every time?
It has to be a kissable person.
Okay.
Which you'll note is kind of vague. Because
has kissability.
Yes, because it's like, for example, like he can't kiss all girls because some of them are like, you know, his teachers, and he can't kiss like, you know, little kids who are like 12 or anything.
Right.
But he can kiss any girl who is his age if he, you know, pays them correctly, because that's a thing. And there are a handful of guys who also can be kissed. So
right. Oh yeah, I remember that being a thing people were upset about.
Course. But I mean, honestly, I kind of feel like that is the reason that Bully, like, that people remember it very much, is that like there was the queer element, and also like that kind of element, dedication to character, is kind of what that whole situation, like why people even remember Bully at all, as opposed to like, you know, San Andreas and like, you know, Grand Theft Auto, because it's like, you know, people don't really care about the characters in those as much, I would say. But the point is that the kissing mechanic is genius in a specific regard, because since the health boost that you gain from the act of kissing somebody ticks down slowly over time, you know, assuming you don't like get into a fight and get hit and lose it, you know, that way, that kind of means that you're sort of constantly as a player, like checking your health and being like, oh, I'm running low on boost. I should go find somebody to make out with, which basically it's putting you in the head of a horny teenager. And I feel like that's actually kind of clever. It's just a shame.
That's game design.
Yeah.
Is game design. Yeah. It's a shame, though, that in order to get the mechanic, like you play a mini game in art class and it has absolutely jack fucking shit to do with any of that.
That's also game design.
I mean, yeah, I get why. But like, honestly, they were fucking cowards. What they should have done is it should have been like a dress up fashion thing. Because in the game, there are certain items of clothing that if you wear them and then you try to hit on people, they'll just laugh in your face. like your mom will send you a reindeer patterned jumper for Christmas. And if you wear it, people won't kiss you at all. So it's like, if they had really been thoughtful about it, they could have had Jimmy Hopkins, like, I don't know, designing outfits or something. But they didn't, both because that probably would have been too difficult, and also because, I don't know, probably low-key boys don't do home ec.
Yeah, I wonder how much of it was like they needed to come up with something for the art class to, an upgrade for the art class to give you, and they were just like, oh, we'll throw that other mechanic in here.
I think that the kissing mechanic was, like, originally, like, pretty centralized, like, somewhere in the design process. At least I heard that vaguely within the grapevine, but like Bully has so much stuff, like, you know, it's a Rockstar game, so it's like it is about having more things going on in it than it is about doing anything particularly well. So
yeah,
which is, you know, that's fine, but like a little sad. And it's like you can definitely see that like they ran up against, you know, working conditions of the time, where like you're like, oh, this is just, there's all this buildup and you're just going to do this one little thing. Okay. It's like, oh, because they had this whole thing planned, but they didn't have time to implement it. Got it. Cool. Thanks, Rockstar.
I do think that's common. Yeah. Yeah. I remember at the time I was really enthralled by Bully, just because it was at the time, like the Rockstar games were in my eyes, like the most polished, most AAA games, but doing that to a setting like a boarding school, I thought was very interesting. And I still think it's very interesting, actually.
Yeah.
So I was very excited about that. In terms of how they actually did, it's kind of middling. But
yeah,
just the very fact that they did it successfully to that level of polish is pretty amazing. It's worth playing for that alone, I think.
For sure. I mean, I actually was introduced to Bully via, like, randomly clicking on it in fanfiction.net and reading the fanfiction. So like I had like my own personal head, like in my mind, picturing the setting of the game. And I had just read another book that had a boarding school that had a very interesting interpretation, where it's like the dorms were like in like a castle, and it's like a spiral staircase situation. I was like, and like I just kind of automatically substituted that in, and then, you know, I played the game and I was fucking profoundly disappointed by just, it's just a box. It's really lame. Oh, also it's ugly.
The game is ugly.
Yeah, it's like they're trying for realistic and the tone just
that's 2006.
Yeah,
that's 2006 video games.
Indeed it is, but that doesn't stop it from being accurate. It's like they had, like, Psychonauts existed, you know, they could have gone for that. It didn't, actually. I don't know, timelines, how do they work? But yeah, it is sort of funny how, like, the fact that, like, Jimmy, at least like within the small fandom that does exist, like he is sort of portrayed often as like this Casanova guy who like knows how to seduce anybody, mostly I think as a result of the fact that like you can get the kissing mechanic so easily, because like if you deliberately fail all your art classes, Jimmy will just be the worst person at flirting in the world. Like, he'll go up to somebody and be like, hey, nice face, which is honestly really fucking funny.
I think what it is, it's the game designers saying that, yeah, artists are the people who are best at kissing. That's what it means.
Well,
if
yeah,
you're good at art, yep, it means you're good at kissing.
That does make sense in that, like, I still have no idea how you kiss people in boarding school.
Well, obviously.
So, but the people that I observed kissing in school were those kind of people. Well, there were a number of different classes of people. And it wasn't because they went to art class, but there is some correlation there.
Oh, no, for sure.
Like, I suspect many game developers in the 2000s were also like, no idea how do you do this. That might be like, well, obviously you go to art class, or they might be making a commentary on that sort of thinking,
mm-hmm,
like it, a joke, if you will. Like, those games are full of jokes.
Yeah, they are. But it's, I don't know, I wouldn't say Bully is particularly witty.
No, not necessarily, but it is, that it does have a lot of jokes in it, whether or not you think they're funny.
Fair. But like, I feel like a more interesting version of Bully might have like a theater kids click, in addition to the nerds, preps, greasers, and jocks that we get in the game.
I think that would be much more interesting. Yeah.
Shame.
I think every class should unlock kissing for a different group.
Oh yeah.
Like every person has like their demographics of what classes you need to take for them to want to kiss you.
I will say the game has like, you know, a faction loyalty mechanic whereby if you like, depending on how your standing is with their individual faction, they may or may not be willing to kiss you. But because through the course of the story, Jimmy kisses literally all of the girls in the school at some point, except for one of them who doesn't matter to the plot, they will like always be, you know, positive towards him. But if you go out of your way to kiss all of the guys, then at the end of the game, when the game just does is like, hey, we're going to magically make everybody hate you again, and then it's like you're fighting this gauntlet of all of the factions, and then like there's the, you know, the gay one in this round, and you're like, hey, you want to make out? And because of the mechanic of like, if somebody kisses you, they will be positive to you forever. So it's emergent gameplay. That's funny. I don't know if they had that on purpose, but it's really funny.
I do like that. It's very Dwarf Fortress.
Yeah. There's also this whole thing whereby if you kiss somebody in front of another person who you've also kissed, they can run away crying, they will aggro onto you and start trying to beat you up, or they'll aggro onto the other person, which is particularly funny if it's a boy aggroing to a girl, because if you ever hit a girl in this game, they will immediately spawn like whatever appropriate authority figure is there, basically give you an instant 5-star rating and you're like instant penalty, which is very funny to watch as a player. So it's like, yeah, I wish they had had more of that.
The Rockstar games have a kind of a shaky relationship with the dress up doll aspect of those games, because
sure.
I think just about all of them, you have significant control over your character's appearance, but it almost never feeds back into the game.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And the times that it does feel like the game is breaking character, even though it make like, so the example that I'm thinking of is in Grand Theft Auto 4, you can date people. And if you go on a second date, like, this happened to me, like, I don't know how, like, how broadly this occurs with different people you can date, but there was this one person I went on a second date and she said, I like that outfit too, good for you for wearing it again. And the third date, she said, you wore the same clothes again? What is wrong with you?
That's actually super fucking funny.
It was very funny. But it was also just like, the game has established, like, through its continued lack of commentary on any of my fashion choices, that it does, like, that is invisible to the gameplay mechanics. Evidently not to this character, though.
Well, yeah, but like, how often do people comment on your outfit in real life?
Well, if I dressed like I did in those games, I bet it would be more often.
That's fair. They do let you like run around in your underwear and shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Bully, yeah, in Bully, that's like definitely true. Like they do have the kissing thing where like people won't make out with you, but it's also, I did notice one thing that was mildly interesting where like, because of the way that the ending cutscene shakes out, like with the confrontation with the villain, of all of the footage that I've ever seen of it, I don't think I've ever seen the player character wearing the same thing during it. It's not even necessarily that it's always like something stupid. It's like sometimes, you know, it's just a different outfit, or like they gave Jimmy tattoos this round because that's a thing you can do.
Right.
And a more intentional game could maybe juxtapose that change in appearance versus the villain who we've known from the beginning of the game and like was the tutorial fairy, and yet he looks identical to then. Maybe he should have gotten out more and I don't know, played some shitty mini games and gotten a life, but he did not. Whoops. R.I.P. So yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about the kissing mechanic.
Well, we can't get into other aspects of Bully for reasons we'll get to later.
Spoilers.
My topic is podcast prep sheet trending guests and topics. I got this email. Let me see if I can find it. It's from Podcast Prep Sheet, and it's the subject line is Podcast Prep Sheet trending guests and topics for January 29th, 2024. I've been getting this recently. I've been getting like emails from people or companies that have realized that I have a podcast, and like the bulk of them have been like negging me about how few subscribers I have. Like they're like 200 episodes and only 300 subscribers. You need our YouTube service that puts your podcast on YouTube.
I mean, couldn't you just do that if you wanted to?
If I wanted my podcast on YouTube, it would be on YouTube.
It's very easy to upload a podcast to YouTube.
It is.
It's very, yeah. That's not a thing you need a third party to do for you.
Right.
Exactly. What? I know nothing about YouTube and I know that.
But this is a new one, the podcast prep sheet. And it has topics in the title, so I had to read it.
Right.
They have some example topics. Okay, actually, wait, no, this is a list of podcast guests. So here's an expert on business, hotel, industry, and real estate, Rob Hayes. Feel free to contact him to be a guest on your show. And his example topics, I could have had Rob Hayes on instead of either of you. And Rob would have talked about Secrets Behind the Suite, Unveiling the Hidden World of Luxury Hotels. The Future Is Now, How AI and Robots Are Revolutionizing Your Hotel Stay. Or Eco-Friendly or Eco-Fail, The Truth About Sustainable Hotels.
I mean,
we also have expert on oil and gas investing, Jay Young.
Oh, lovely. Ugh.
Black Gold Economics, Navigating the Volatile World of Oil Prices. Expert on True Crime and Criminal Defense, Jeremy Rosenthal. Example topics, Law and Disorder, How TV Crime Shows Get It Wrong. Why do none of the topics anybody ever suggests have that sort of zip? Nobody ever says Law and Disorder on my show.
I mean,
till now.
Yeah, till now.
I mean, I'll have you know, I did put a slight amount of effort into the first suggestion that I wrote, but, you know, we're not talking about because of reasons.
That's fair.
You know, if you wanted me to write it fancy, I could have written it fancy.
Okay.
Y'all know you need to ask.
Yeah, no, you looked at what was already in the bucket and you followed the house style. And that's, I respect that.
I'm very dependable. That's why you should hire me, a mysterious person listening to this podcast.
There's also, check out, yeah, look for the resume in the show notes. There's also, they're talking about like a podcast concierge, which is finding guests to interview. That is something I need.
Really?
Are you going to run out of guests? I don't see that happening.
I feel like you literally pulled me in off the street.
This show's been going on for so long and you're still finding new guests. Like, I don't know. I don't see how that could possibly be a thing that you would need.
Well, what I need is someone who knows all of my friends and also knows how recently they've been on the show.
So you don't have to keep track of it?
So I don't have to, like, this is my least favorite part of the show is like booking guests. And it's not like it's a hardship to message people and say, hey, do you want to be on the show? And yet my social anxiety flares up. I always worry, like, I'm asking people, somebody, the same person on too many times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that makes sense. It's like kind of a secretary.
Yeah. If only I had a concierge.
Clearly you need to pay this email spam company.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. To help you.
Yeah.
Whatever their multi-level marketing scheme they're trying to sneak under the rug here is.
Yeah. But yeah, I can see why, like, that would be sort of upsetting, just having to, like, kind of juggle all of that, even if it's, you know, like, you know that it's easy, but it's like, you're like, I just don't want to do it. As somebody without social anxiety, I can't relate, but I can see why that would be hard.
All right.
That's why I don't have a podcast.
I don't have a podcast because I'm lazy.
New topic. I just happened to click on my spam folder, and one of the emails that I sent to myself just as a note to future self is in there.
What?
Did you detect yourself as spam?
I detected myself as spam.
How?
What service are you? Gmail?
This is Gmail. Yeah.
Hey, is it too much to ask for you to read the contents of this draft that got detected as spam so we can figure out what's spam about it?
So there's no body, and the subject line just says fork chops.
Yeah, no, that's spam. Yeah, no.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what? I am spam. That's reasonable, e-gmail.
Oh, I just had to remember fork chops.
Fork chop. Oh, like pork. No, wait, not like pork chops.
Well.
Chopsticks, but with forks.
I'm trying to decide now. Should I go into this, or is this going to be a future topic?
It's your podcast. You're the secretary of your podcast.
You can book yourself.
I can, and I do every episode. And that's another thing that sucks.
If this show was just two guests and you don't have to say anything.
Oh man, yeah, I could have let you two hash it out about Homestuck.
No, but you have to have consent to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You could get somebody else to take the fall and lecture them about Homestuck next time.
Right. Yes. So someone who doesn't know what they're getting into. Ideally.
Yeah. That is required.
I do have a friend who has a lot of opinions about Homestuck. I could probably ask him.
Are we ready for another topic?
I am ready for another topic.
For this topic, we're going to be reading the poem "The Tay Bridge Disaster" by William McGonagall. Who would like to read this poem?
I'm raising my hand.
Okay, go for it.
"The Tay Bridge Disaster" by William McGonagall. Beautiful railway bridge to the silvery Tay. Alas, I am very sorry to say that 90 lives have been taken away on the Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. 'Twas about 7 o'clock at night. And the wind it blew with all its might, and the rain came pouring down, and the dark clouds seemed to frown, and the demon of the air seemed to say, I'll blow down the bridge of Tay. When the train left Edinburgh, the passengers' hearts were light and felt no sorrow, but Boreas blew a terrific gale, which made their hearts for to quail, and many of the passengers with fear did say, I hope God will send us safe across the bridge of Tay. But then the train came near to Wormit Bay. Boreas, he did loud and angry bray, and shook the central girders of the bridge of Tay on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. So the train sped on with all its might, and Bonnie Dundee soon hove in sight, and the passengers' hearts felt light, thinking they would enjoy themselves on the new year with their friends at home they loved most dear, and wished them all a happy new year. So the train moved slowly along the bridge of Tay until it was about midway. Then the central girders with a crash gave way, and down went the train and passengers into the Tay. The storm fiend did loudly bray, because 90 lives had been taken away on the last Sabbath day of May 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. As soon as the catastrophe came to be known, the alarm from mouth to mouth was blown, and the cry rang out all over the town. Good heavens, the Tay Bridge is blown down! And a passenger train from Edinburgh, which filled all the people's hearts with sorrow, and made for them to turn pale, because none of the passengers were saved to tell the tale. How the disaster happened on the last Sabbath day of 1879, which will be remembered for a very long time. It must have been an awful sight to witness in the dusky moonlight, when the storm fiend did laugh and angry did bray along the railway bridge of the Silvery Tay. Oh, ill-fated bridge of the Silvery Tay, I must now conclude my lay by telling the world fearlessly, without the greatest dismay, that your central girders would not have given way, at least many sensible men do say, had they been supported on each side with buttresses. At least many sensible men confess, the stronger we build our houses to build, the less chance we have of being killed. By William McGonagall.
I love having a less chance of being killed.
Mm-hmm. Poetry.
Poetry.
That's poetry.
Little, none of the poems we've had on the show have had civil engineering advice in them so far. Just this one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I first heard this, or like a passing mention in, well, there is your problem.
Right.
Which is, do you accept children's books, texts as poems?
Yeah, we did a Shel Silverstein poem not so long ago.
Okay, I'm just curious. I'll just keep that in mind, in the back of my brain pockets.
Yeah, we've done, I think we've also done like Dr. Seuss.
Yeah, Dr. Seuss slaps.
It was a good one.
Dr. Seuss ever read anything about civil engineering? I'm trying to think of something that like might tangentially count, and I'm drawing a blank.
I mean, I feel like the civil engineering in the Dr. Seuss world is so beyond mortals ken to understand that it would be like an abstract metaphor for like life stuff, maybe. Oh, right. The places you'll go if you can engineer the way, maybe.
Just a quick Google does not reveal anything enlightening about that. According to Quora, there is no direct evidence that Dr. Seuss ever expressed his opinion about Donald Trump or Trump's presidency.
How old is Dr. Seuss?
Dr. Seuss died in 1991.
Oh.
So thanks, Quora.
So no evidence, huh?
Thanks for that.
All right.
That's a
fun fact.
I mean, Donald Trump did exist.
Yeah, people knew about Donald Trump in the 80s.
But he was not. Did he run for president?
He talked about maybe running for president.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, that's never going to happen. And did like sitcom episodes making fun of the idea of, oh, what if Donald Trump was president? And so now there's a bunch of media from like the 80s and 90s that depicts Donald Trump as president because he mentioned in passing that he was thinking about doing it. And they're all saying, oh, how silly it would be if that ever happened.
And then conspiracy theorists are like, this proves.
Well, they predicted. Oh, the Simpsons predicted the future. Yep. They knew this would happen.
TV makes it real.
There you go. Impeccable logic there.
No problem with that reading at all.
That was a fun poem to read.
What is a fun poem to read? It depends what your idea of fun is.
It felt good in my mouth. Even if I did stumble a bit. I don't know.
Oh, the Jabberwocky's pretty good about that.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
I'm just looking at the list of poems we've done.
I do love a good nonsense poem. That is it's an underrated genre.
Yeah.
Region.
What would a bad nonsense poem be?
I don't know. That's the thing. It's really hard to mess up because you're just, I guess if you like, if it makes too much sense.
You could do what the Tay Bridge disaster one does and have every rhyme be the same final syllable.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty bad.
Perhaps.
A nonsense poem where it's just the same nonsense word every single time.
Coolidge. Coolidge. Coolidge.
Yeah, see? Horrible poem.
Thank you.
Oh, this one's really good. Sweater. This is one we did an episode 124 called, it's called Sweater Weather, a love Song to Language by Sharon Bryan. I'm not gonna read it again, but like, you should look that one up. It's fun to say.
Should listen to that entire previous episode, I think.
You should.
You know, I was listening to a few of the previous episodes and it was a lot of fun to listen to. Like, I don't usually go for podcasts where it's just people sitting around talking, but you have good taste, Jim.
Personally, I only listen to podcasts that don't have people talking in them. that's my style.
So it's a wise choice.
Well, like, as in people, like, prepared audio, I guess is my point.
Right.
Yeah. This was one of the reasons I invited you on, was that, like, the conversation we had was indicated to me that you would like this sort of conversation that we have on this show.
Yeah.
The pattern seems to be like, oh yeah, if you have ADHD and you like fixate and you go down rabbit holes and you want to talk to your friends about the rabbit holes, that's what this show is about.
Yeah.
I do like this idea of we're like, I think 2/3 of the way through the episode, probably. Now we're telling people what the show is.
Yeah, it's about time.
By the way, this is what you've been listening to.
Is this your first episode? Who is this? This is for the first episode.
I don't know.
Every episode is someone's first episode.
If it's your first episode, leave a comment somewhere. I don't know where comments could go. Leave a comment.
Who knows where?
Leave a comment on Mr. Beast's most recent video saying that you watched this.
Leave a 5-star rating, please.
There's a subreddit, but like there hasn't been a comment. Like I post every episode as a post to this subreddit, the Topic Lord subreddit. And I think there's been like 2 responses in the last year. So
leave a comment on Kelobi Productions, Our Drawings, Princess Movie, Animation Film Artist.
Yeah.
And talking about this podcast episode.
All the engagement happens in the Discord, apparently.
That makes sense.
So first you have to sign up for the Topic Lords Patreon to get into the Discord. And then you can leave a comment in the Discord that this was your first episode.
Oh, smart. Pay us money to be engaged. There you go.
That's right.
Not us, just Jim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not getting any money.
Oh, it all goes to Esper. It all goes to the editor.
Okay.
Thank you, Esper. Jim doesn't even appreciate you.
We do appreciate you, Esper.
Thanks, Esper.
Are we ready for another topic?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fifth, your topic is, no, but seriously, what the hell is up with the user interface in Bully? I assume it's just a Rockstar thing. I'm only into Bully, so it is a mystery.
Okay. So when I got into Bully, I found a used copy of it in a Goodwill somewhere, and I purchased it, which turned out to mostly be useless because it turns out if you don't have a PS2 and the PS3 you have isn't backwards compatible, you got to download an emulator, and Bully was not designed to be played on a keyboard. That shit needs an analog stick. Otherwise, you look like an absolute idiot trying to pick locks. But
that sounds right.
The point being, I did, however, have the game's manual, which is actually kind of cute. It is styled to be sort of like, you know, that welcome material that, like, you know, schools will send out, that it's like, welcome, it's your first semester, here's what's so great about our school, blah 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 blah. And it's like, this manual was like, oh, it's got a letter from the principal, who like was definitely probably not going to be the main bad guy that got scrapped at some point, probably, and it's like, it was all like written in like a, you know, kind of Garamond kind of font situation, where it's like, oh, it's academic, like, you know, and it was all styled and written in that kind of like voice, I guess, of it being sort of marketing, but like gone wrong, because, you know, it's basically talking about how terrible the school is with a very, very soft veneer, because it is a Rockstar game and they're making fun of themselves.
Right.
And then in the actual game, the main UI that like I was thinking of when I wrote that was, the main menu has a statistics tab, which, if I am correct, I think is probably pretty standard for like a Rockstar game, because it's like, it's open world, so they've got all kinds of statistics, like how many kilometers you've swam, run, and walked.
Yeah.
Which is, why is it kilometers? This takes place in the United States. Is it because it was made by the Vancouver people? I don't know. But there's like, there are so many statistics that it's like, it's absurd. Like, I remember I started a burner account, like, you know, I just kind of like started a new game of Bully, like to mess around with the stats to kind of like see what was going on. And if you don't shoot anything and you go and eat a banana and then you drop the banana peel and then you deliberately slip on the banana peel yourself, that counts as a hit, which means that then you will have like in your ratio of like things hit and like your accuracy, you'll have like 32 hits out of one shot or something.
Yeah. I remember doing that trick in Galaga. It was a waste of a quarter.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really get you anything is the thing. Like,
just like in real life.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, slipping on a banana peel in real life is not particularly rewarding.
But it does technically count as hitting someone. it says so in the official rules.
Yeah, the banana rules. But yeah, so my thing is that it's like they have that, and then it's like, but that's just like one stat buried among like this really absurdly long list that like takes at least a good like 5 seconds just to scroll down with the analog stick, you know? And it's like, do you really need all of that, guys? And it's especially annoying to me because like it's presented in the style, like in the same like font and sort of like, you know, coloration and like formatting as manual for the game, which is sort of like, it makes it look like it's official school stuff, which kind of carries with it the really weird implication that for some reason Bulworth Academy is stalking this 15-year-old and like taking notes about how many banana peels he's slipped on and like how many kilometers he's driven a fucking like lawnmower.
That's what school's like, right?
Yeah, as we all know, that's what they do. But it's like, I remember I did kind of a deep dive on the UI in Bully because I kind of want to be a UI design person because that's something I find really interesting. I just kind of like kept being confused why they did it so that it looked like an official school thing when I feel like it wouldn't have been that hard to just have it be like a couple of pages and like have it be written by Jimmy, you know, especially because in the scholarship edition of the game, they have like a couple of new mini games, one of them being math. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. What do you get for passing math? You get clothes. You don't actually get anything for right. passing math. It's just vanity. So it's like, it makes even less sense mechanically than the fucking kissing mechanic, than art. But like, it would be cool if like, oh, the more math classes you pass, then you unlock more advanced statistics. So it's like, one, the user isn't being like shoved all of these statistics like right down their throat immediately all the time. And it's more of an opt-in situation. And it kind of shows like a bit of growth on Jimmy's part. Like maybe like as he passes the math classes, he goes from like keeping track of like a couple of things just because they're funny. And then it's like at the end of the track, you get like, oh, he's got like advanced, like now it's on graph paper. And that's how you know it's serious. And it's got, you know, it's neatly written and shit instead of like the first level. It's like, I got fucking hit by a car X number of times, which is definitely how Jimmy would phrase that.
So like having worked in game development for a while, I'm pretty sure the design process went like this. You know, they had a meeting where someone was like, maybe we should make the UI look like the school brochure or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, sounds good. And then they put the statistics screen in because they do that in every Rockstar game. So the statistics screen has to look like the school brochure. Like my beef with statistics screens in this sort of game is that if you glance through the screen, you see spoilers for every game mechanic that's going to be in the game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it takes away all the surprises.
Yeah. I remember in Skyrim, I started the game and I was like looking through the stats screen and there was a line about how many robots I'd killed.
Ooh.
Like, oh, come on, guys.
That's sad.
Super Mario Odyssey has this mechanic where it does track like every single action you perform and how many times you do it. And it'll like give you moons for doing every action a certain number of times.
Right.
But Mario Odyssey doesn't show you your statistics until you've beaten the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It avoids that specific problem of like you need to have seen everything before you can talk to the NPC who will give you all your statistics and say, oh, you need to do this mechanic 1,000 times and we'll give you one more moon.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's fair.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the way Mario Odyssey handled secrets. And this might have just been my personal experience, but I was finding new stuff in that game pretty late in my playthrough.
Yeah, they hit stuff pretty well in that game. Like there's like it feels play tested, right? It feels like something where they watched a bunch of players do stuff and said, okay, anything players do, we need to award everything. Mm-hmm. If there's something that's hard to do and anyone does it, then we need to make sure that they get an award for it. So they put secrets everywhere that anyone ever thought to look.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. I do kind of feel bad comparing Bully to fucking Super Mario Odyssey.
They are very different games.
Yeah. The most polished game series in existence. Yeah.
Bully is so clearly like, you know, low on the like, we had a specific vision and we executed it as well as we possibly could poll, which is kind of like the way that I prefer to look at things is like the things that I really like the most are the things that have the most like good with the least amount of like fluff. So it's like density of quality over like sheer amount of goodness, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And Bully definitely does not hit that. It's like there's some good stretched out over a lot of kind of mediocrity is how I'd describe it.
Yeah. There was a Howard Hawks quote that I've seen around saying that a good movie is a movie that has three good scenes and no bad scenes.
Oof.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is an interesting way to measure it.
Yeah.
I suppose.
I don't know. I don't know how you do that with video games, though.
A good video game is one that has 8 good levels and no bad levels.
3 good boss fights. 3 good stats screens and no bad stats screens.
A game that has 3 good stats screens and doesn't have a nice level.
And does it track how many cars that you got hit by and does it swear when it does so?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Does your protagonist yell, "Hey, I'm walking here"?
No, I really wish Jimmy did do that in the game.
Yeah.
His whole thing is like he's the speediest person on the planet because, you know, he's a video game character and doesn't need to breathe, but everybody else is programmed to need to be able to like stop and like take a breath after running for a while.
Right.
But, you know, you can just keep hammering the X button. Or you could just hop on a skateboard and just like literally like run circles around people.
Oh, I forgot that game had I remembered the bicycle, but not the skateboard.
Yeah, see, I'm very odd in that like I just didn't fucking bother with the bikes like ever when I played.
Why would you if there's a skateboard?
Exactly. You. Yes, exactly. Also, it isn't difficult to use the skateboard, unlike, you know, fucking Tony Hawk games where you have to be skilled to do an ollie, and I'm just like, just you hit the button and you go up. That's it.
Are we ready for another topic?
I'm ready for another topic.
Mitch, your topic is comments that say, "Why did the algorithm recommend this to me?"
You ever seen this?
Oh, yeah.
I have, yeah.
Bizarre phenomenon, which I'm fascinated by because I see it on a pretty regular basis. So people will be recommended a video or something similar, and they'll think to themselves, "Huh, this is very different from what I normally watch. This isn't the sort of thing I would click on. Why is the algorithm showing this to me?" And the way they decide to express this idea is by clicking on the video.
They're trying to solve this mystery.
Engaging with it and posting a comment that says to the person who made the video, "Huh, why is the algorithm recommending this to me?"
Well, what are they going to do? They're going to leave the video they're currently watching, leave the comment there. Why did the video recommend to me? And then the eighth
right, layer. There isn't a place where it's appropriate to say this.
Right.
Unless you're like talking to your friends in a private setting or whatever, right? Like it's not.
You could tell the preacher at confession.
Yeah, but it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy thing, right? Because the reason it's recommending it to you is because the algorithm predicted that you were going to engage with this.
Right.
And you did. It was correct. And you're awarding it for making that prediction. So it's now going to show you something else that it thinks you're going to do that with.
This is a koan of some kind.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because like when you pointed that out, I was just like, oh yeah, that thing that happens. And then I remember that you have like a semi-popular YouTube channel. So you probably have a very different perspective on that phenomenon because I engage with that concept on the other end where I keep getting these weird fucking videos. I remember at one point I got like this recommendation for like, you know, this video that had like 0 views and was like clearly like some evangelical Christian trying to like talk about, you know, God. And I'm like, why? And the answer, like, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm just so nonplussed by it that I feel compelled to comment. And then it's like, I try to be polite when I do, but it is also like, you know, the answer is probably because like combination of like that thing where it's like, yeah, it's unexpected. So it makes people engage with it more. Probably YouTube is forcing randomness into it. And also something about evangelical Christians is going to make me, a person who's not super jazzed about being shown that kind of content, a little mad. So I'm more likely to engage with it. And then, of course, there's the comments.
Yeah, I mean, if you do make a habit of clicking on those videos and leaving comments on them, that is directly telling YouTube, hey, show me more of this, please.
Yeah, I have noticed, actually, that like a lot of, like lately, YouTube has been recommending a lot more stuff that like clearly has like no views yet. So I think something tells me that they must be like forcing more randomness.
Yeah, I've also noticed that. I think that's like a really good thing that YouTube is doing, that they're promoting stuff that has like, I very frequently am recommended stuff that's like, hey, here's a Let's Play that has 10 views from mm-hmm. 1 year ago. Like it's a 1 year old Let's Play with 10 views. And I think it's really good that YouTube is recommending that stuff to people. Yeah. I'm not going to click on it, but I'm glad that YouTube thought that I should. Indeed. These tiny channels that normally wouldn't get any exposure because yeah. no one cares. It's good that the randomness is like trying to narrow like that gap a little bit and like try to say, hey, maybe this video that no one's ever seen is going to be good. We don't know. No one's ever seen it.
The other phenomenon of like me seeing a video with like, you know, a thing where it's like, I'm embarrassed that I know exactly why the algorithm is recommending that to me. And, you know, I click on it. And it is what the algorithm said it was going to be, like, you know, the thumbnail, mm-hmm. the title. And it's like, yep, that is a PMV of the character that I'm currently obsessed with. Thanks, YouTube. You know, I'm a little fucking simping bitch.
I really do like for what it's worth. Like, I do actually think the YouTube like recommendation algorithm is pretty good. Yeah, like, it's not in comparison to how it works on like YouTube's main competitors or whatever, like mm-hmm. I think it's good that YouTube shows you a bunch of options.
True.
And that you can pick which one of those you want to watch instead of just giving you one video, which is what a platform like TikTok does, where it's like, okay, after this video, here's the next video. And, you know, you decide while you're watching it if you want to watch the whole thing.
I don't know if I'd call TikTok a YouTube competitor because, like, they're such different things.
YouTube would.
yeah, well, YouTube doesn't know shit. Like,
I don't know if you know this, but I'm actually the only person who takes YouTube's YouTube creator surveys that they do every once in a while.
fucking course you are.
that's probably not literally true, but I have talked to other YouTubers and about YouTube's creator surveys, and 0% of YouTubers I've spoken to have taken YouTube's YouTube creator surveys. So of people I know, I'm the only one who takes them. But YouTube's surveys, they ask a bunch of questions about like, what do you use YouTube for? What do you use YouTube's competitors for? What are you looking for in a platform? What do you think about like these new features we're considering adding? But YouTube considers TikTok one of their main competitors. It's TikTok and Twitch are they're like the ones YouTube's like, oh yeah, we gotta make sure that the TikTok and Twitch demographics come to our platform instead of those, even though it's a fundamentally different form of media.
Yeah, I mean that's true. It's like I have to constantly delete the shorts thingy from my homepage because I never ever want to click on shorts, and I hate it when people send me YouTube shorts because I'm just like, I just have this on TikTok instead.
So in the show notes, there's going to be a link to a Firefox browser extension that automatically redirects links that would have gone to YouTube shorts to the normal YouTube video player. It's really helpful.
Is it the same content just in the different player?
Yeah, so the YouTube video player like will play YouTube shorts. It's just, you have to manually edit the URL to change it into the normal format. But there's a Firefox browser extension that'll just do it automatically.
Yeah. Is a short just like, it's got the phone aspect ratio and it's a certain length mm-hmm. and then it's automatically slotted into that? Or is it like...
No, YouTubers need to decide for themselves if they want their videos to be shorts.
Okay.
I mean, I just hate it because it's like, I hate having it be like automatically playing and it's, like, YouTube
yeah,
already.
It's just a worse video player. If I wanted to use TikTok, I would use TikTok, but I don't want to use TikTok.
I mean, TikTok is good for what it is. It's just not my thing, you know?
Yeah, right. There is a demographic that enjoys it. I'm not. Yeah. I like long form videos. I don't like short form videos. I don't like being spoon fed exactly one video to watch.
Give me the 6 hour analysis videos, please and thank you.
Give me 5 6-hour analysis videos and let me pick which one I want to watch.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Whenever companies are doing that, they have to be thinking about like, well, what about the time Facebook took the thing where you can just write anything on your timeline from Twitter?
Right.
That was a massive success. Everybody loved it. And that's how they engage with Facebook now. That's the only time the user reaction has ever been like that.
I mean,
across
you know, you can make text posts on YouTube. Did you know?
Yes.
You can make text posts on YouTube. You can post a tweet to youtube.com.
How do people look at it?
On your YouTube channel. It's like there's a tab that no one clicks on.
The community tab, right?
The community tab, yeah. Like, obviously what people actually use it for is for links to other things, right? That's what I use it for.
I can't imagine why I would ever want to go to YouTube to look at the tweets of the things that I've subscribed to.
Yeah, it's a video platform.
I made a joke about this. Like, I got a notification from YouTube saying, you've unlocked posting. This was like last year. And I was just like, yeah, thanks, I guess.
Yeah, they don't give it to everyone. That's the thing.
What do you mean, me? Some random?
Well, it's to avoid spam. You need to have a certain amount of subscribers before they let you make text posts.
What? So I wouldn't even be able to engage with this utterly useless feature, probably.
Well, you can post comments in other people's text posts.
Yeah, you need a certain number of subscribers before you can see text posts, too.
Just what we need, more inability to fucking...
Hey, by the way, for everyone who has over 200 subscribers, YouTube is Twitter now.
Yeah, that would be something.
If you have over 1 million subscribers, you can't actually watch videos anymore.
Oh, thank God. Finally, I'm saved.
Finally, YouTube is usable.
Wow, I just clicked on somebody's community tab and here's a bunch of posts.
Yeah.
They're making... there's polls...
I feel like polls are the most common usage of
polls and links to other things. But you theoretically can just make text posts.
There are links in here to their YouTube videos, which is very funny.
Oh yeah, that's the other thing people do all the time. People just post a link to their own video in their community tab, which you need to be on their channel or subscribe to their channel to even see that. Like I get why people do it. It's because they want to send people multiple notifications for the video. You know, respect that hustle. But also, like, come on. I don't want to see multiple notifications for a video.
I have 183 notifications for YouTube or something. I don't fucking read any of them.
Yeah, what I think, if YouTube wants to, like, copy what other websites are doing, YouTube should, like, turn into, like, a Wikipedia clone.
Oh, so anybody can edit any video?
People already do their, like when people are doing the research for stuff, they use, like, YouTube and Wikipedia as their entry points. I think YouTube should, like, tap into that market and just become Wikipedia.
They were inching in that direction back when anybody could edit captions for any video.
That's true.
I miss those days.
I miss that. Man, I miss community captions so much. It was such a good feature. Like, I get why, like, they got rid of it because of spam and stuff, but that's not the feature's fault, you know?
Yeah.
The way they did fucking, what are they called, annotations dirty, like...
Oh, man. Okay, the thing that happened to annotations, this is, like... So, okay, everyone who doesn't know, I guess...
All two of you, or the people from, like, 5 billion years in the future.
Yeah, if you're listening to this in the distant future. So, like, annotations were this thing on YouTube where you could have, like, a little text box that was, like, overlaid on top of the video somewhere. And you could, like, have them be different colors. You could have them be a link to something. You could have it be a link to, like, a time code in the current video or a time code in a different video. It was a whole thing. When they were a thing, annotations were used a lot. They were also misused a lot. YouTube mm-hmm. reported that the most common interaction with annotations was disabling them. But annotations were a thing that a lot of people use, and they use them in creative ways. Like, people use them to make, like, interactive videos. Like, they do, like, a choose-your-own-adventure style thing where they use annotations where you can jump to different time points to make decisions as though you're, like, playing a game or something. And it was real cool. Now, when YouTube Mobile was launched, they didn't have support for annotations at first. Or ever. and YouTubers started thinking, well, so many people are watching these videos on mobiles, we can't rely on annotations because people aren't going to see them. So YouTubers stopped using annotations regularly. Mm-hmm. And YouTube looked at that and said, oh, YouTubers don't use annotations anymore. So it would make sense for us to get rid of the feature, which is wild because the reason YouTubers stopped using it was because they stopped supporting it. Like
they were so powerful, like in terms of usability, that it's like it makes sense that YouTube was just never going to support them long term, because it's like as time goes on and like the internet becomes less and less powerful in the service of like usability. Like we went from GeoCities and your own website to like Facebook pages and whatnot. And now it's just down to tweets. And it's like, it makes sense from the progression of the internet, but it's still sad.
Yeah. It was a really cool thing that YouTube had that, like, I don't think any other video hosting platform has like an equivalent to annotations. Like it was a YouTube specific thing.
Yeah. Except for the thing from the Japanese website where the
annotations appear on the video.
The vinegar thing originates. I don't remember the name of it.
Oh, the balsamic vinegar?
Yeah. That
or Nico Nico?
Yeah. So it's probably the closest.
Nico Nico, it's like, it's not something that's like, that had the same amount of authorship as annotations. Like annotations did have like a very brief window of time when they were just anyone can add annotations to a video. That lasted, I think, like a week, and every video that was published during that week had just a million annotations added to it all at once, and YouTube just immediately canned the feature.
I mean, that's reasonable. What the fuck did they think that would be a good idea?
It is reasonable, but a Nico Nico comments on the video do work that way, where anyone watching the video can leave a comment and stylize the comment with like a certain text size and format, and the comment will appear on top of the video instead of next to it. Mm-hmm. Which it's a very interesting aesthetic that Nico Nico videos end up having, where you just have all these comments that just keep popping up and scrolling across the screen constantly.
Right.
You get when a funny thing happens, you get all the W's in chat. It is a neat thing, and I think that is like somewhat analogous, but it's more collaborative, and it's not
telling that it is the only thing that like is both like remotely popular and remotely similar. Like nothing else really exists.
That's all the time we have for Topic Lords.
All right,
Mitch, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on YouTube, Jan Miesely, lowercase Jan, capital Miesely. By the time this comes out, either the how many Mario games are there Part 2 poll is still open, and yeah, you can take that survey. Ooh. Still, or it's not.
Sorry.
One of those.
And the video will be up?
Well, I'm sure there will be a period of time between when the survey closes and I finish the video. Statistically, if you're listening to this in the very distant future, then the video is out. I think that's the one that's going to be safest to bet on.
Okay.
But you know, one of those two things will be true is my point. Either you'll be able to take the survey, or you won't be able to take the survey.
Or all of this will be gone, and this is the only remaining remnant of this time.
You're reading a cassette tape that you dug out of the desert. You're listening to
this next to someone's skeleton.
Who preserved this?
You're a future creature that can see magnetic images, magnetic fields, and you're reading this cassette tape with your eyes.
Yep. Sorry. Probably video doesn't exist for you. R.I.P.
It's really nice of them to archive the self-promotion part at the end of the podcast when they were doing the 10,000 years in the future archive of this show.
Aw, so sweet.
I mean, it is the most mundane aspect.
Well, I don't know. I get it, though, because whenever I see like a torrent of a movie that's taped from TV from the 80s, I'm like, oh, are the ads in there?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the good part.
Yeah.
That's the part you can't get anywhere else.
That's right.
It's like the way that like every time we move on to a new technology that removes an inconvenience previous technology had, they always try and like recreate it to make it feel authentic. Yeah,
video games still have scan lines.
If you're listening to this 10,000 years in the future, leave a comment on whatever YouTuber is currently popular. Maybe YouTube still exists. I'm assuming it does.
It's the only thing that exists. There are no humans left.
Leave an annotation to explain why it's great.
And Fifth, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
I have an email, I guess.
Is it something that you want people to know your email?
Probably not. Okay. Well, if you wanted to find me on the internet, my AO3 account is Kimmond, as is my GitHub account. So probably that. K-I-M-N-D. So
all right.
Whatever.
Hire Kimmond.
Yeah, do it.
Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Jim. This is the audio I append to every episode of Topic Lords. Congratulations to our newly anointed lords. This episode was edited by Esper Quinn, who can also edit your episode if you contact them on Twitter. If you'd like more people to hear the show, you can tell your friends about it, or rate and review us on whatever podcast service you use. You can add content to the Topic Bucket by emailing topicbucket@topiclords.com, and you can contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/topiclords. Patrons get episodes a week early, and you get access to the Topic Lords Discord, where you can discuss topics with all the lords that hang out in there. See you next episode.